Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
We had an email yesterday. This is a very old building.
Oh my gosh, I was kidding, Greg.
This is a very old building.
Can we talk about the sensitive pipes here?
We do have sensitive pipes. The Grand Avenue Mall, it's an old building, been around forever, right? So occasionally things happen. Yeah, temperatures get below zero like they were, and potentially get a little bit of issues with your plumbing now and then, right? It's an old building. It happens from time to time.
I was just wondering, so now that you spilled the beans, I feel like we need to explain to the fans. So in our bathrooms downstairs, there's a sign that says sensitive pipes. And then it says, seriously, save any major operations for another restroom. And then it has what you would call a burp emoji.
Yeah, poop emoji.
I didn't want to say it, but there you go. And then there's a big red X on it.
Yeah.
And it says, thank you. It's a very nicely written note. It's a very polite note, just warning us about the sensitive pipes. But it just cracked me up when I went in there the other day. I thought, what is this? And then it made me wonder, have our pipes always been sensitive? Did they just start to be sensitive? Are they going to not be sensitive in the future at some point? Because at some point, somebody's going to have to go.
That's a very good point. Thankfully, there are other bathrooms here at the Avenue, which you can use. Or you can just walk over to the Starbucks in the Hilton or something like that, right? I don't know if they have a bathroom in there. But at some point, you'll run into one in the Hilton and then maybe get yourself a Starbucks.
So now you know a little bit behind the scenes. The more you know, right?
There you go.
Here's your top 2 at 2 on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one, the White House just rolled out what it's calling Trump accounts. This happened today. We heard a little bit about this. We knew the president was going to do this. Well, now it's happened. These are government-sponsored accounts that can be opened for kids. The government will deposit $1,000 for every child born between 2025 and 2028. Some big companies are already coming out today saying they're going to match the money. The account would be tied to funds that track the stock market's performance. And kids won't be able to access the money until they're 18. Stephen Kay, a financial analyst with Bankrate, outlines the differences between one of these Trump accounts and one that's tied to education funding.
If you want to save primarily for higher education expenses, pay for college or graduate school for your children, then a 529 is going to be a superior option. If you're looking to save for their future in a very open-ended way, then these Trump accounts could be a good option because you have a little bit of flexibility as to what they can use that for at 18.
I mentioned already today some big companies have come out and said we're going to match this. I think there's going to be more too, but right now, just to name a couple, JPMorgan Chase and Bank of America have come out and said they will match the government's one-time contribution to those kids' accounts.
Number two, a measles outbreak in South Carolina now said to be the largest in 3 decades. Nearly 800 cases reported, with the most in Spartanburg County near the North Carolina border. 600 children recently received their MMR vaccines in South Carolina, according to the state's health department. The vast majority of people who got sick were unvaccinated. ABC News medical correspondent Dr. Darian Sutton says getting vaccinated, no doubt the best way to prevent getting a very contagious disease.
When we're talking about measles, we're talking about the most contagious virus that exists on this planet. And for context, if one person walks through a room of 100 people who are not vaccinated, at least 90 people will get that infection.
Well, just 2 days ago, a travel-related case of measles was confirmed in Waukesha County, marking the state's first case of the year. Health officials doing some contact tracing. It doesn't appear any public exposure locations have been identified here. There were 36 measles cases reported in Wisconsin in 2025, largely from an outbreak in Oconto County. It's 2:15 approaching here on WTMJ. Well, we talked to you last week about it, and it continues today. The American Red Cross declaring a severe emergency blood shortage. They're calling on people to donate as often as possible. The problem is demand from hospitals has outpaced supply, and this was before a wicked and brutal winter weather storm blanketed the country. We welcome at ABC's Jim Ryan in Dallas, where weather typically doesn't affect blood drives, Jim, but I suppose it is this year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the roads have been slick. Schools have been closed for the last, 3 days now, the school districts, because of the weather. You're right. It has cut into donations. Red Cross, which supplies about 40% of the nation's blood, is 35% down on donations. Part of it is because of the weather. But even going into this storm, there were shortages. I mean, you've got measles, you've got flu creeping around the country, and that's keeping people from being able to donate. And that's how we end up with this really bad shortage right now, Greg.
So, Jim, what types of blood are most urgently needed right now?
Generally, O negative is the one that is really sought out there. That's the universal donor blood. They're not being picky right now. Red Cross wants everybody who can give blood, everybody who's 17 or up, weighs 110 pounds, generally good health, to go and give blood.
They had a little promotion going for a while where if you donated blood, you got entered to win two tickets to the Super Bowl. That has since expired. But what else is the Red Cross doing to try and entice people to donate?
Well, it used to be, you know, the cannon, it used to be T-shirts with some little tchotchkes like this. Well, now it's a $20 gift card. That's nothing to sneeze at. And they aren't specific about the merchant. The person who gives blood can choose the merchant and take that card with them. So they're trying to incentivize this as much as possible, Greg, to get people to come in.
And we do still have, even though here in our area, and I thought, ooh, that's a big one, you know, a chance to win two tickets, take two people to the Super Bowl. That's fantastic. So that is over in our area right now. But we do still have the gift card situation going for $20 in our area, which is something for people. But I did wonder, Jim, when they first announced this, does that work? It sounds good, but do we know, are the blood centers seeing results because of that? Are people actually coming in because of those gift cards?
I think people who consistently give blood, they would do it with or without the gift cards or the T-shirts. Feeling of responsibility, like, you know what? I give this this donation of blood, I could be saving somebody's life. Somebody gets in a car crash, they can use up 100 units of blood. So every unit counts. Sometimes 6.8 million people every year donate blood, and still barely enough.
Why does the blood supply keep hitting crisis levels? Is there something that's broken in the system? I know we're we're in a worse situation after this huge storm that hit across the country. I get that, but I do feel like every year all of a sudden we get to hear that we're at a crisis level.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is the cold weather, you know, and of course, somewhere in some laboratory right now, they're working on synthetic blood so that we won't have to go through this every year. But for now, it's just a matter of getting a human being with human blood, no matter the type, to sit down and roll up their sleeve and get blood.
Real quick, before we let you go, weather today, weather this weekend, it looks like Dallas is going to get hit again with something.
Yeah, it's going to be cold down here. This Arctic vortex, this vortex of cold weather is going to creep in this direction again and then move east pretty much the same way that it did two or three days ago. So that makes things tough. The schools are closed, businesses closed, and so too are the blood drives.
ABC's Jim Ryan from Dallas. We appreciate it, Jim. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Greg. See you, Jessica.
Preparations are ramping up in California for the Super Bowl, set to kick off in about a week and a half. Yep, it's the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. We wish it was the Packers. ABC's Alex Stone tells us how they're getting ready right now.
Nick Pappas is the NFL's field director. He's walking the freshly laid grass at Levi's Stadium. A whole new field has been put down, so it's fresh and perfect looking for the Super Bowl.
The new field was brought in. It takes about 2 days to install the field. And then from there, we start all of our typical maintenance practices, mowing, aerating, fertilizing.
He says next week, entertainers will come in to practice a halftime show on game day. He says his focus is simple, watching how the players' feet interact with the field. Alex Stone, ABC News.
You ready for that halftime show? I love how the halftime show, no matter who it is, every single year causes so much controversy.
Your favorite halftime show, what was it? Can you recall? I've got a few.
I don't know if I have a favorite, and I'll tell you what. I don't like to pick favorites, number one, but two, I like so much music. I mean, the only type of music I don't like is heavy metal, somebody shouting at me. But other than that, I love today's hits. I love Frank Sinatra. I love today's country. I love R&B. So I have a hard time picking favorites. I don't know that I could. I usually find, what's your favorite? I'm just not, I find something good in all of them.
There are certain halftime shows that were just more memorable to me than others.
So, sure.
U2 halftime show after 9/11 was unbelievable. They scrolled all the names of those who died in the 9/11 World Trade Center attacks and beyond. It was moving. It was unbelievable. And U2 is just, the biggest of the big, right? Just massive, massive band.
You keep wanting U2 to come to Summerfest.
That's never going to happen, I don't believe. I'd like it to come back to the Midwest, maybe the Sphere, where I could watch them play live. I also thought Prince in the driving rain
was
an incredible performance. Whether you like his music or not, he's just giving it, man. I mean, it's like a thunderstorm and he's out there.
When I think back, that's the one that I can visualize. So
incredible.
I guess if I had to pick a favorite, I always liked Prince too. I mean, when I was a kid, I had Prince on LP, and I remember like standing in the basement up on my couch and I was like dancing, singing Purple Rain and all that goodness. So I'll give you that one. I mean, that was incredible. A lot of people liked Beyonce too. I'm a huge Usher fan. So that would be up there for me, but so many good ones. Bad Bunny, though, this year. Bad Bunny.
Yeah, Bad Bunny. So at some point, the halftime show, as you know it, it morphed. It was not always this. It was not always the biggest of the big in worlds of music. I mean, it was like the University of Florida marching band in the 80s. At times, or at a time, it started to shift. 1988, if you want to go back that far, they did have the marching bands, they did have that kind of stuff, that level of pomp and circumstance, but they also had Chubby Checker, right? And then Elvis, they had the Florida Area Dance Performers one year. So, I mean, it really took until the 90s where it really took off, and you had New Kids on the Block and some Disney characters in 1991. After that...
Wait, New Kids on the Block played
all
the Super
music,
Bowl?
Yes. New Kids on the Block in 1991. Then you had Gloria Estefan. The final year, you had Brian Boitano doing some ice skating.
Oh.
Had members of the Olympic hockey team, right? It was kind of an everything show. Michael Jackson was a halftime show performer.
Yeah, early 90s for that one, right?
You know what I mean? So you had a little bit of a shift. In fact, I would say a seismic shift from, you know, marching bands to Michael Jackson. Yes, that is quite a 180.
I remember it was 2022, so a few years ago, but not that long ago at this point. It was when Dr. Dre was performing, Snoop Dogg was performing, Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar, and Eminem. And I went down to visit my mom in Florida, and I guess everybody got together. It must have been a Super Bowl party, if I remember correctly. And I remember the older people being like, "What is this? And who are these people?" And I was jamming out to that one. And I remember some of my friends, too, from like the old high school days texting in saying, "This is the best." And that's the thing. I mean, you had my friends from high school texting in and saying, "This is amazing. This show is incredible." And then you had this older generation saying, "This is the worst. This music is terrible." And I just feel like that is a chorus we hear often, year after year after year. And it's going to be with Bad Bunny, too.
For sure.
I mean, people around the world... I mean, Bad Bunny is huge. People around the world are going to say this was amazing, and then there are going to be some people who say, "I still don't know who Bad Bunny is, and that was terrible."
Do you remember last year's halftime show performer?
Give me a hint.
World of hip-hop, Jay-Z, Rock Nation artist, Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, yep. I would not have been able to tell you that, but I watched it.
Usher was the year before, as you mentioned. He's had a couple of appearances, as a matter of fact.
I do love Usher.
It's coming. 2:27 here on WTMJ News. Coming up in a few. All right, this is a story I'm fascinated with. Progress continues to be made in the Elmbrook School District toward changing the start times for elementary, middle school, and high school students in the district. A school start time board committee was authorized to be created by the school board in October of 2024. So why are they looking at this? They feel that the way it's constructed right now doesn't best optimize the stage of life that these students are in. They're trying to figure out a way to better align sleep research and academic performance with their school start times.
It's really clear and consistent. Adolescents need more sleep. Even in our own surveying of parents and families, our own students are not getting the amount of sleep that they need. In addition, circadian rhythm changes for these adolescents, so it's harder for them to go to bed earlier and wake up earlier. They're just naturally up later. We've noticed that our schedule doesn't really match the research, and it causes, you know, sleep deprivation can cause stress, reduced ability to solve problems, memory, focus problems, mood, energy.
So that's Scott Wheeler. He's the district board president. We spoke to him in August as this was starting to gain a little bit of momentum. Now, you and I are both graduates from the Elmbrook School District. The one difference between you and me is that I experienced each level of schooling in the district, grade school, middle school, and high school. So I'm familiar with all of the start times, and I was somewhat shocked to learn that the start times that exist today at all levels are exactly the same as when I was in school going back to 1987.
Well, it's so funny. So when we're talking about this, I thought, do I remember the exact time that school started? And I didn't. I actually texted some of my friends and I said, do you guys remember the exact time that we started school? And I said, if so, do you remember having any feelings about it? Do you remember feeling like, oh, this was way, way early? And so then they're rattling off, like texting back. I think it was this time. But I laughed because one of my friends wrote back and said, honestly, didn't feel any sort of way that I remember. What I did love was getting out at 2:05 on Thursdays. Right. So what she did remember was getting out at 2:05 p.m. on Thursdays for early release. But the thing is, it hasn't changed. And so then it got into a discussion with one of my friends mentioning, yeah, my friend Sarah, her kids are in Elmbrook and the bus comes at an ungodly hour. And that's the thing. It's just, if the bus, it's not even about the school start times, but ultimately that's what this is about. But it's the fact that you've got to get the kids up, get them ready, get them going, or they're getting themselves, depending on the age, of course. And then getting onto the bus, if they're taking the bus, and getting them. I mean, that's a whole process. So you've got to get up, in some cases, extra early to make this happen.
So middle school for 7th and 8th graders in the Elmbrook School District begins at 7:18. 7:18. Now, back out as much time as you want to get the kids up and get them ready, get the lunch packed, get them on the bus. Time spent for busing, too, if you can streamline the process and drive your kid to school. You might save a little bit of time there, but nonetheless, that is an incredibly early start time. Classes at Brookfield East and Brookfield Central High School begin at 7:55. Classes at the elementary school level begins at 8:50. So a pretty wide swath of time frames there. But the research suggests the model needs an overhauling. And the board took the feedback from students as part of their consideration.
One of the things they told us is it's hard to focus that first hour of the day if you're in middle school. If you're starting that class at 7:15 in the morning, I'm tired. It's hard to think. They said it's kind of hard to eat lunch at 10:30 or 11 in the morning. It's so early. And they, again, their body isn't necessarily ready for a break or nutrition at that time. They've been up for a while. That's when lunch needs to be, but that's not when they would normally eat lunch. And so we heard things like, I could use more sleep. It would help me focus better in school. It would improve my grades. It would help me remember, think, problem solve.
But it's not as easy as just flipping a switch here, right? I mean, there's a number of considerations to bring into the discussion. One is the research. Here's what the research suggests in our timing model. It doesn't support where the research is. That's the reason why this is all being researched. They're going through pricing models for busing. I mean, there's all sorts of different considerations. After school activities, what do you do before school? Do you need care for your son or daughter before they go to school at the elementary school level? What about walk zones? If you want to walk to school, you don't have to worry about the bus. That doesn't exist in Brookfield. There's a lot that goes into this.
Yes. Linda. The one thing I remember, and I really enjoyed hearing from him when we talked to him back in August, was that students were a part of this. I mean, to actually hear from the students, that's fabulous, because this is who it impacts the most, right, is the students. And when you talk about the school start time board committee, it's made up of 60 people that include students, parents, teachers, administrators, and the school board. So they're hearing from a lot of people. I think this is great. Like you said, it's not an easy, quick switch. You've got the bus companies that need to be involved, the walk zones, the deployment of walk zones that might have to have some changes. Increased budget costs are a possibility. Nobody wants to hear about increased budget costs. A lot of school districts just struggling right now and don't want to raise costs. But the sleep research is a big deal. And you ultimately want it to be that the kids are getting enough sleep and going to school at a time where they feel like they can do their best.
Wheeler identifies a major hurdle in the operation.
The biggest challenge is logistics, transportation logistics. That's a factor. What's the daily schedules of families? Parents have to go to work. There's after school activities. Like you said, if we change our after school activity time, what about our conference partners, the other school districts?
Which is a really interesting point as well. I mean, just because Elmbrook is looking at doing this, it doesn't mean other districts within their conference are doing it, which could make things a little bit tricky when it comes to after school activities. You mentioned the cost. So as part of this model, and we both have in our hands here this long presentation, about 20 pages long, that this committee presented at a school board meeting yesterday, in which they made their recommendation. Here's what we want to do, and there are some other options on the table, but this committee is recommending to the board moving from a three-tier bus system to a two-tier bus system. This will cost the district anywhere from $600,000 to $950,000 per year. This is money added to the transportation budget. But they've come to this conclusion after roughly 18 months of research, meetings, presentations, feedback, revisions, and so on. They're doing it the right way. They've taken their time with this. So the proposal is this. Elementary schools begin the earliest at 7:40. This is 70 minutes earlier than the current model. High school classes begin at 8:14, 19 minutes later than the current model. And middle school classes begin at 8:24, 66 minutes later than the current schedule. So the earliest start time is 22 minutes later than the current earliest start time. And this would affect elementary school kids who, I don't know, if I use my kids at a barometer, yeah, they don't love getting up, but they seem to bounce into shape pretty quickly. And I think that the research suggests that as well. As kids get a little older, you reach middle school, sleep, time to wind down at night, it becomes more critical for them.
But there's still going to be early release, right? I mean, come on. That's the most important question.
That was implemented at somewhere along the line. I think I was in high school. I think I might have been middle school when early release on Thursdays became a thing in our district. And I remember loving the concept of it. I also remember that we'd have basketball practice at like 4:30. So I'd have to just like hang out at the school anyway. And like, what the heck am I going to do for 2.5 hours here? Certainly not physics homework. Come on. You kidding me?
I can still remember the alarm clock that would go off so I could make sure that I was on time at Brookfield East when the bell rang at 7:55. One of those old brown ones that like everybody had. Do you remember that? Just one of those very simple ones. It was brown.
Yeah, the alarm would screech.
Like in the 90s. Yes. and you wanted to slam it.
You know, it wasn't as big of an issue to me in high school because for half of my high school career, I could drive to school. So I didn't really have to worry about the bus. It didn't. Yeah, it saved me a few minutes. But I remember getting up in the 6 o'clock hour, I mean early, to go to middle school and thinking, whew, what are we doing here? And I'm amazed that they have not shifted off this start time since I was a student. I mean, we're really going back a long time. They do expect to have a final information gathering session here in a district goal by April of 2026 to finalize the plan for school start times. And they'll address programming as well and after-school activities. But if it goes through, and it looks like it could here, 27 likely, or beginning next school year, maybe the better way to put it, this could potentially be implemented. I am fascinated by the idea, but I'm wondering if other school districts will get on board.
One of our fans from the 414 writes in, so then are we going to start telling companies in the world that life doesn't start till 9, 10 a.m.? This is ridiculous.
What's ridiculous about it? You have staggered start times as it is. You're trying to manipulate things and shift it for the category of students that need more sleep than the others.
Some people are saying, hey, it's been like this. The kids have been doing it and they've been okay. So why change now? From the 414, this is ridiculous.
The research suggests that the kids have not been okay if you've been paying attention.
Are you hearing from Greg? He's getting feisty.
I'm supporting this. I support it 100%. Makes a lot of sense. 249. All right, just a couple minutes left here in the program. We make way for Wisconsin's afternoon news. John Mercure is back. He'd been stuck out in these icy conditions out in South Carolina. They've got a home out there, and he was trying to get back, and they got stuck in Charlotte. But he is back. He made it, and that's good news, and they're back to full strength here beginning today.
Yeah, he's back. I was talking to him about it earlier today, and he was just expressing the frustration of when you're at the airport and your flight gets delayed, and then it gets delayed again and delayed and delayed and then finally canceled. And I said, yeah, I've talked to my husband about that sometimes. And just with his, you know, the background in aviation and working for one of the major airlines, that's something that frustrates him to the nth degree because he's like, I just wish they would cancel. Because sometimes he can kind of tell and he'll say, you know, that flight's going to cancel. I just wish they would tell people now instead of doing the delay, 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 delay that it sounds like John got involved in. Yeah. And it's just because if you have a home that's close and you know it's going to get canceled, then you can go back home, right? But instead, you're sitting there at the airport for a couple of hours. And sometimes they don't know. I mean, the people at the gate agents, they don't always know. They're just getting the information that they need to tell the people. And sometimes they don't have all the facts, and they don't specifically know it's going to cancel. So it's tricky. But he's back. He got back.
I do wonder if the pilots, I think it's a fascinating network of flights, and you're trying to move things around here. And this cancellation is a ripple effect because it affects this, and you got hubs all over the place and so on. I do wonder at what point you just got to pull the plug You know what I mean? It sounded like this went on for hours, that you're at the airport for a 7 o'clock flight. By midnight, you're still sitting at the airport. They're still saying you're going to get out. And then it takes until 4 in the morning to cancel the flight. Like, what is the process there? How do you not shut that down earlier? Does your husband ever get into a situation where it's like, hey, we know you're supposed to be on this flight going here, but we need you here because you still have hours, and we got to make sure that we can get this flight off the ground. I always wonder how they do that behind the scenes.
Well, I'll tell you what, over the weekend, and there's still some people. I mean, John's back, but it took him a couple of days. There's still some people who are trying to get back from just Mother Nature this past weekend with the ice down south and the snow out east. My husband was supposed to fly to Atlanta first from Milwaukee and then go to Cape Town, South Africa. Mm. And he told me even ahead of time, he's like, I think I'm going to get stuck. He said, I'm going to be able to go on Saturday from Milwaukee to Atlanta. He's like, but I feel like they're going to end up canceling the flight and I'm going to be stuck in Atlanta. But he actually, it lucked out. And they canceled the flight early enough that he didn't even have to go down to Atlanta. But yeah, I mean, as we've talked about here, it's a ripple effect when stuff like this happens and it doesn't just bounce back quickly.
No, yeah, and conditions are not expected to be much better here across the bulk of the United States. Into the weekend, they're still looking at sub-freezing temperatures in cities like Atlanta and Santa Fe and even Dallas, Texas. Well, we are back again tomorrow with an action-packed Wisconsin's Midday News. We'll give way to Wisconsin's Afternoon News with John and Julia coming up in just a few minutes. If you missed any bit of our program, check out our podcast page, Wisconsin's Midday News Podcast, built by Siding Unlimited. Everything is up there. Show by show, segment by segment. Take us with you and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. News coming up.